Chapter 12.
Once we'd decided the Great Abyss was our destination, it didn't take us long to mobilize. Since my crew and I were all used to being out at sea and not staying in one place for long, we were all packed light. So we all scattered back into the spindrel rooms and gathered up what few belongings we had, while the hedgehog women did the same, though my crew was done way before the rest of the group.
"I wonder what's taken him so long?"
Swa'er questioned with a quirk of his little head.
"The only thing they have to grab are their pony sticks."
"Perhaps they need to change their leaves as well,"
Batari chuckled.
"I can't imagine that type of clothing would last very long, particularly after going through combat."
"They looked pretty sturdy to me,"
Theora mused.
"Honestly, I'm wondering if they would show me how to make clothes out of those glowing leaves. I could almost guarantee the rest of the Nearlopes back home would find them comfortable."
"I don't understand how anyone could find that comfortable,"
Awara shuddered.
"Leaves are cold, stiff, and have sharp edges. I'd be worried about getting cuts in places I didn't even know existed."
"Lumina leaves are quite durable,"
Valea's soft voice suddenly explained.
"But you're right, they're not designed for battle. That's why Alvi made us these so long ago."
My crew's attention snapped over to the spindrel women, and my mouth fell agape when I saw what they were wearing. Gone were the neon bioluminescent leaf bikinis, and instead, each of the hedgehog women wore a form-fitting armor made up of dark brown wood. The garments were fashioned to look like a cross between a corset and a typical medieval breastplate, but they were just as revealing as the leafy clothes they had on before. The spindrel women's breasts were covered by two pointed Madonna-esque pieces that jutted out nearly 6 inches from their chest and amplified the long, sensual lines of their cleavage. Directly beneath the boob coverings were a series of small, rounded bits of wood that overlapped each other like shingles and draped down to just above the spindrel's midriffs. The wooden shingles were attached to nothing at the bottom, so they dangled freely and swished back and forth like chainmail with each step the women took. The luminous leaf bottoms were now gone as well, replaced now by a singular bent piece of wood that surrounded the front half of the spindrel's waist like a hoop skirt. The tip of the wooden bottoms came down to about the women's inner thigh, with two rough half circles that had been cut out to allow for leg movement. As far as I could tell, though, there was no back whatsoever. I couldn't wait for any of these beautiful hedgehog women to turn around. Kaelan had now shed his burlap sack of a tunic and was adorned in similar wooden armor. His armor was a bit more modest than his mother's, of course, though it was equally as stylized. Kaelan's breastplate was made up entirely of the circular wooden shingles, which enveloped his torso and even his shoulders. But unlike the armor of the spindrel women, Kaelan's armor was one singular piece that draped down past his waistband and offered him protection all the way down to his knees. It was honestly like he was the woodland equivalent of Robin Hood, and I couldn't help but smirk as he approached with a bit of swagger in his walk. My smirk instantly turned to a frown, however, when he winked at Morella. My daughter wasn't really having it either, because she simply stifled a laugh at his actions and then shook her head.
"You made this, Alvi!"
Ashanti gasped as she clicked her tongue.
"Those look incredible!"
"It wasn't hard,"
Alvi muttered.
"Just bent and cut wood."
"Everything in your dwelling is made of natural materials. The fact that you cut out such intricate wooden pieces without metal or even stone is a fucking incredible feat."
"It was nothing,"
the brunette shrugged.
"Just tore off the pieces I needed, then I smoothed them with wood covered in sand."
Incredible. Alvi had been able to use a bunch of frickin' natural materials to make her own sandpaper.
"I hope you get to meet Isla someday,"
Mira laughed.
"She would absolutely love to learn your secrets."
"Secrets stay in here,"
Alvi smirked as she tapped her temple.
"I don't mind making more, though."
"Please do,"
Batari interjected.
"I love the freedom of movement that this leather on my body allows, but it doesn't give us much protection from enemies." "Spoken like a true hand-to-hand fighter, Batari,"
Ashanti teased.
"As much as that armor might protect my body, way too constrictive. I wouldn't even be able to twist top my Mirak if I could even sit on my Mirak comfortably to begin with."
"I think you're being a bit overdramatic,"
the Queen Mother rolled her eyes.
"You've seen the spindrel people fight. If their armor was that constrictive, they wouldn't use it."
"If you say so,"
the Chero woman with the shaved head shrugged.
"But don't blame me when I have to save your horn from enemies who are swarming you. It works for them,"
Batari protested and pointed to the spindrel.
"They do a bunch of twists and twirls and kicks when they fight. And you don't."
Ashanti reminded her friend with a wink.
Your fighting style's about as mobile as a wide horn.
Damn, if this were a roast battle, the crowd would have gone wild.
Do you want me to blow her away?
Swa-Air offered his bond mate.
There's that big lake down below so she wouldn't get hurt.
The queen mother simply shook her head and raised a hand to calm the wind dragon.
Is that any way to talk to your leader?
Batari raised an eyebrow.
Sure it is,
Lazan declared as she nudged Nadir.
I talk to Nadir like that all the time.
No, probably not the right way to talk to my leader.
Ashanti nodded.
But it's how I talk to one of my best friends.
Batari's eyes rolled far back into her head, but she still let an amused smile spread across her face.
Dawn should be breaking at any moment now.
Pei interjected.
With most of the monoflock threat taken care of, we should be able to travel in relative safety once the first bits of sunlight come through the clouds.
Why do we have to wait for the sunlight?
Theora questioned.
Your island is pretty dark even during the day.
Most of the predators on our island only come out at night,
Valea warned.
If you think the monoflock were bad, I hope you never encounter any of the horrors that dwell in the darkness.
Darkness?
The Nirilove woman continued.
There are bright lights around at all times.
Before anyone else could answer, Nadir stepped in.
Gunag women are crepuscular,
she announced to the spindrel women.
I can explain this. You see, Theora, it doesn't matter how much light there is. Something inside us creatures tells us when it's time to sleep or wake up or go and prowl. I bet it's the same for the predators of this island. They don't need it to be dark. They just need it to be a certain time of day when the sun goes down.
I see.
Theora frowned.
We should certainly wait until the daybreak, then.
Let's get the dragons and that creepy crawler of yours rounded up.
Shala whistled as she made a circular motion with her finger.
I think by the time we get down to the main level and let them know what's going on, the sun will be high in the sky.
I'll save us some time.
Awara chuckled as she rose into the air on her pink wings.
I'll go ahead and fly down ahead of you guys so I can inform the dragons. And the ant, if he can even understand me.
Miram was very smart.
Ashanti placed her hands on her hips.
He can probably understand us better than we can understand each other.
All right, all right.
Awara raised her hands in defense.
I didn't mean any insult. I just wanted to make sure before I wasted a lot of time talking to an insect that can't talk back. I'd look very, very foolish if he couldn't actually understand me.
With that, the butterfly woman gave us a short wave and then hovered over to the edge of the stone platform. She whipped her orange locks out of her eyes before she peered down at the lake below and then disappeared over the side. Her body plummeted like a stone for a brief moment, and then Awara spread out her rosy wings, glided downward, and landed next to the lake in a matter of seconds.
Well, now she is just showing off.
Lazan scoffed.
I bet we could get down there quickly too, Nadir.
I'm not sure about that.
Nadir mused as she looked at the walls.
Look at how slippery and smooth this cavern is. There's not really anything to grab onto, and I don't think even our claws would be able to penetrate this hard stone. That sounds like the talk of somebody who's already given up.
Lazan smirked at her leader.
We won't know until we try. And if your theory doesn't work, we'll be nothing but mangled corpses on the cave floor.
Nadir retorted.
Is not a good idea, Lazan. Especially now that we have two little kunags growing inside of us. It's one thing to tempt death when it's just ourselves, but now we have to worry about our children. The thick hide on our bodies might be able to protect us from much Lazan, but it doesn't make us invincible.
Wow, I whispered to the rest of the crew. Nadir's becoming a lot more mature and stable as she gets further along into her pregnancy. Color me surprised.
Now, holding the luminous leaves above our heads to help us glide down?
The raven-haired kunag woman grinned at her friend.
That would be much more responsible and safer. Do you spindrels happen to have any extra luminous leaves lying around we could borrow? Preferably giant ones.
Lazan added as she gave a size estimate with her hand.
Ones that are at least double the size of our body and are thick enough to hold our weight.
There was that kunag craziness I'd come to know and love. I was honestly starting to wonder just how insane our children would end up being. Between my reckless, bold nature and the kunag's love of all things violent and adrenaline-inducing, we were going to have our hands full.
I'm afraid not,
Pei noted with an amused smile.
All of the luminous leaves we have stored away are currently in use, so you'll have to walk down the stairs with the rest of us.
Oh, well.
Nadir looked at Lazan and shrugged. Lazan, on the other hand, apparently wasn't satisfied with that answer. The raccoon woman got down on all fours, raised her ringed tail into the air behind her, and then wiggled her ass back and forth.
I guess we'll just have to race then,
she declared.
If that baby bump of yours doesn't slow you down. Please.
Nadir scoffed before she got into the same position.
I could still beat you if I was pregnant with a full litter.
Is that? I raised my finger as the realization of her words kicked in. Is that something that can happen with you guys? Neither of the raccoon women answered. Instead, they simply arched their backs like Olympic sprinters and then took off toward the stairs.
Oh.
Sharla chuckled.
I'm not doing that. I've already had more than enough physical activity for the day.
My heart swelled along with my dick as I thought back to our time in the room, and I shot Sharla and Errol a flirty smile. Both of the hedgehog women returned the gesture before they turned toward the stairs and strutted off in their elegant wooden armor. The rest of us followed closely behind the spindrel women, and soon we came to the dreaded staircase that appeared to stretch on for miles. Well, if nothing else, at least I was going to get my steps in for the day. My friends and I made our way down the long, slowly declining stairs. The journey felt about as tedious and monotonous as you could imagine, though there was one thing that kept me going the whole time. The spindrel women. Since they were all walking ahead of me, I could see them from behind, and, just as I'd theorized earlier, the backs of their armor were pretty much non-existent. The hedgehog woman's beautiful, curvy asses were covered with nothing but a tiny strip of fabric that hung down from their waistbands. And I stared intensely as they jiggled, shook, and bounced with each step the women took. With the way these women dressed, it was a wonder how anything got done around this place when the men were still around. Soon we arrived at the bottom of the stairs, and I had to lean against the wall while I caught my breath.
Maybe you guys should consider installing an elevator?
I huffed as my chest tightened, and my lungs burned like there was a furnace in my chest.
Or an escalator or something.
Trust me, Draco Rex.
Pei chuckled.
If there was an easier way for us to get up to our dwelling, we would have incorporated it long ago.
Not even a chairlift?
I teased as I tried to catch my breath.
I don't know what you guys are complaining about. My legs feel fine.
Perhaps next time I should make you walk.
Batari grumbled to the dragon on her shoulder.
I don't think your stubby legs could possibly make it all the way down those stairs. It would also be a literal weight off my shoulders. You know we'd just fly anyways.
Ashanti sighed as she doubled over to try and catch her breath.
I wish I had wings right about now. It's not that bad.
Ura joked with a cocky smirk.
Once you've done it a few hundred times, it becomes second nature. By that point, the worst part about the journey is simply how long it takes, and that's not really a problem since you can just pass the time with a bit of small talk.
If we have to do this again, I'm off the crew.
Mira joked.
I never want to see a set of stone stairs again in my life.
It took us a minute to catch our breaths before we made our way over to where Awara, the two dragons, and Ashanti's Mirak were hanging out. When we got there, Cheren and Tyrion were both lounging in the underground lake, while the Mirak and the Morpho woman chilled on its shoreline. Cheren blew a few shots of seawater into the sky, which Tyrion quickly turned to steam with a blast of his white-hot fire breath.
Please tell me you aren't ready to go already.
Awara frowned when she saw us approach.
I was just starting to get relaxed in the steam bath.
The air around us was heavy and humid, to the point where I could feel the droplets with each breath I took. Sorry to burst your bubble, but yeah, it's time to head out. Did you already give these guys the lowdown?
We're going to a deep, potentially deadly pit so we can try to rebond one of you with a dragon. Also, whatever was in that sleeping powder was really strong. Oh, that was the best sleep I've gotten in several moon cycles.
It might have been your best sleep,
Cheren scoffed.
But it was a disaster for everybody else who tried to get some rest. Do you have any idea how loud you snore?
My snoring has never bothered anyone before,
the silver dragon retorted.
Swaer, George, and Malky have all shared quarters with me, and none of them ever complained about my... Was it more like grinding stones or a dying animal?
Swaer interrupted as he looked at Cheren.
Dying animal?
The purple water dragon nodded.
Most definitely dying animal.
Those are the worst. I found if I stick my whiskers into my ears, it usually drowns out most of the noise. I...
Tyrion looked at the wind dragon with wide eyes.
I had no idea. Why didn't anyone say anything before?
I can answer that one.
Cheren grumbled.
It's because you're mostly with my father and brother. Let me tell you, they both snore just as bad.
Ooh, it's true.
Swaer nodded his head firmly.
Oh, back at the Chero village, it was like you were dueling to see who could sound more like a terrified wide horn.
I let out a short, quick guffaw at the exchange, though the spindrel women all looked at me like I'd gone mad. Sorry, I forgot you guys can't hear what they're saying. Tyrion says the sleeping powder really put him out, and he's wondering if we could snag some for our own personal collection.
We have plenty,
Valeya noted.
I'll just have to throw some more together before you leave the island.
Now that I'm thinking about it,
Pei interjected.
We should all take a pouch of the powder. If anything goes wrong with this rebonding ceremony, we may need to try and put the dragon back to sleep.
My heart hammered in my chest at the thought. I'd seen firsthand what an angry dragon that had been woken up mid-ceremony would do. And I really didn't want to see it again.
Please tell me your reserve of sleeping powder is down here.
Mira gasped.
Please tell me we aren't going to have to go all the way back up those stairs.
Then that's what I'll tell you.
Pei chuckled.
It's a complete lie, though.
Oh, no.
Theora crossed her arms and pouted.
There is no way I'm making that journey again, even if it is for something that could help us out immensely.
Oh, you don't have to.
Arrow reassured the Nirilope woman and then pointed to Tyrion.
He could just fly Valeya back up. She can grab the powder from the apothecary and then we can go from there.
You know,
Nadir grumbled.
Having Tyrion fly us up and down would have been 10 times easier and faster than the Ike we just endured.
He's been passed out for the last hour. And I don't have wings, so...
There's no need to worry. If we're successful today, then we'll hopefully never have to go up these stairs ever again. But if we do, yeah, Tyrion is going to be our workhorse.
Just as long as you make the loads light. I'm not carrying the entire crew on my back. Which one of you is Valeya again?
I pointed to the correct spindrel woman, and although I knew she couldn't understand the dragon, Valeya stepped forward and introduced herself once more. She bowed her head of sunflower locks and held out her hand toward Tyrion. And then she began to mutter a strange language underneath her breath as she closed her eyes.
Sinche,
the naturalist mumbled.
Valmtre, Merchulos, Sinche.
As Valeya spoke, the spiny hair on her head started to lift from her skull and spread out until soon they floated around her head weightlessly, like each strand was the tendril of a plasma ball. The hedgehog woman continued to mutter away in her foreign tongue, all while Tyrion looked at her with a perplexed expression. The silver dragon's brow was furrowed with confusion, while his eyes darted back and forth between myself, Valeya, and the rest of our crew.
What is she doing?
Tyrion questioned aloud to anyone who could hear him.
Your auras tell me you're confused,
Valeya said in a kind, gentle voice.
I only wish for you to let me ride on your back for a short while.
Ben?
Tyrion glanced over to me with a gulp.
Is she reading what's in my mind right now? Because I really don't like that.
Do not be frightened, my friend.
The blonde spindrel smiled.
I mean you no harm.
How is she doing this?
Tyrion gasped in horror. She's reading your auras, I explained to the dragon. I'd say she's reading them pretty spot on, too.
Right.
Sharla scoffed.
I could have told you the poor thing was nervous and confused. He's got the same look as a child on their first hunt. You still doubt my abilities?
Valeya grumbled.
Yet you experience them firsthand? You're getting floaty hair in front of a dragon while muttering away in her native tongue.
Sharla continued.
I bet everyone in this room is confused about what's going on right now. Continue to doubt me,
Valeya teased without opening her eyes.
We shall see who has the last laugh, Sharla.
So is this like a new thing that's happening? I whispered to Pei. Or if you had to listen to this bickering for years.
Unfortunately, it is not a new development.
The silver-haired woman sighed.
Valeya has had her aura reading abilities since she was a child, yet Sharla has never once believed in them. Sharla once told us that even if Valeya was telling the truth, her abilities wouldn't be worth luminous fertilizer in the grand scheme of things.
The old Aquaman argument.
Aquaman?
Kaelan interjected.
Is that the name of a legendary dragonkin warrior?
Technically he was an Atlantean, I snickered at the boy. He was the king, actually, and he was a legend amongst his people. Of course, the humans of my world all thought he was a joke. Oh, that's the guy who talks to fish all the time. They would laugh whenever he was brought up. He was even a central figure in a story that revolved around an elder not being able to find a mate, mainly because he worshipped Aquaman like a hero. I never once in my life thought I would be explaining the 40-year-old virgin to a hedgehog teenager, yet here I was.
So what happened to his legend?
Pei asked with wide, engaged eyes.
Did his stories eventually stop being told?
Actually, no. They retold his story in a more popular format and depicted him as a total badass. Now he's a household name again.
What's a badass?
Kaelon questioned.
You may never know.
Morella shot back with a satisfied smirk. I couldn't help but grin at my daughter. It was always great to know I'd passed on a bit of the Whitfield sass to my children, even if I was sometimes at the receiving end of it. It's somebody who's looked up to as tough and powerful, I explained to Kaelon as I tried to keep from giggling. like your mother here. Pei's face turned red at the compliment, though she tried to keep her expression neutral.
Come on, Dad.
Morella sighed at my obvious flirting.
I think what my father is trying to say is Valea will get proper recognition. It's just going to take a little bit of time and the right audience.
I don't even know if she really needs that. Valea is already a badass to me, and I bet all of my people would feel the same if they ever met her.
Ben?
Tyrion asked in an increasingly desperate tone.
If I let her hop on my back, will she stop trying to read my mind?
She's not reading your... I sighed, but then I shook my head and changed my course of action. Yes, if you want it to stop, then take her back up there to grab the sleeping powder. Tyrion's eyes widened before he gave me a nod and looked back at Valea. The silver dragon then stomped over to Valea slowly and leaned his head forward in submission to the blonde hedgehog woman. Gravity seemed to retake Valea's spiny hair as she opened her eyes and grinned at Tyrion, and I could very clearly sense the smugness as she winked at Shala. The naturalist then threw her leg over Tyrion's neck, positioned herself between his shoulder blades, and held on tight to the scales on his nape.
Hold on, hedgehog lady!
Tyrion declared as he sprang up into the air. Tyrion's wings spread from his sides before he thrust them downward and completely defied gravity. My two allies rocketed upward, and they came upon the edge of the platform in no time at all.
Seriously?
Lazan huffed as we all watched Tyrion and Valea disappear.
It was that easy this whole time. We all had to endure the stairs.
Mira grumbled.
Not with this watermelon of a belly, you didn't.
The raccoon woman retorted as she pointed to her pregnant stomach. Don't look at it as a handicap, I mused as I walked over to Lazan. Think of it as a special feature. I tenderly placed my hand against her tummy before I gave her a gentle kiss on the lips. And even though she was tough as nails, Lazan practically melted when I started to brush my fingers through her black and white hair. Her mouth curved into a half grin as her eyes glimmered with happiness, and every bit of tension in her figure relaxed.
It is the most special feature of all, Ben.
The Kunag woman purred.
It is our child. Though I would be completely lying if I told you I wasn't a bit excited for this bump to go away. I've been much, much less mobile lately.
Nonsense. Did you see how fast you made it down those stairs? You and Nadir are as nimble as ever.
Now I know he's just trying to make us feel good.
Nadir snickered.
We were both out of breath before we got even halfway down. I was still faster than Lazan, of course. I'm more pregnant than you are. So I was at a bigger disadvantage, obviously. We got pregnant at the same time,
the raven-haired raccoon woman declared.
My belly is larger.
Lazan stuck out her tongue at her leader.
Which means my child is going to be much, much stronger than yours.
I don't think that's how it works. Unless there's some sort of secret to Kunag pregnancy I don't know yet.
I guess we'll just have to wait and find out when the babies are born,
Lazan admitted.
Though I bet mine will definitely be bigger and stronger right away.
Nadir rolled her eyes at Lazan, but didn't engage in the banter. We waited for a few more moments before Tyrion and Valea returned from their errand. The silver dragon crawled over the side of the stone platform and then plummeted straight down, with his wings back behind him like a swooping hawk. Valea's cries of glee echoed through the cave in one long, continuous sound, as the hedgehog woman held herself down flat against Tyrion's back. Her sounds of joy continued as the two figures continued downward, until Tyrion finally tossed out his wings again and allowed them to act as a leathery parachute. Tyrion and Valea's trajectory slowed to a crawl before the dragon's thick legs planted themselves on the ground before us. Valea slid off the fire breather's back, landed on the ground in a crouch, and then came up with a burlap sack in her hand. The bag itself was about the size of a basketball, though I knew from my experience that it would be plenty. It only took a handful of the powder to knock out Swa Air, so this stuff was potent. Then again, we were going up against a dragon at least 3 times the size of Tyrion, and, as the expression goes, the bigger they are, the harder they fall.
"Behold,"
Valea said, as she held the bag high.
"Our entire reserve of sleeping powder."
"That is your whole reserve?"
Theora questioned.
"I would have thought you'd have a room full of it, not just a satchel."
"It's difficult to make,"
the blonde hedgehog woman explained.
"And it is very, very potent. To the point where I'm actually somewhat worried about taking this much along. If we were to accidentally drop this bag or it was torn open in the middle of combat, our entire group would be knocked out for days."
That doesn't sound so bad," Jonas admitted.
"Sleeping part isn't,"
Alvi interjected as she shot Jonas a stern glare.
"The creatures that find you while you sleep are."
"Certainly. If we were all lying there motionless, the nocturnal creatures of the island would pick our bones clean, whether we were really dead or not."
"Wouldn't the pain wake us up?"
a horrified Jonas questioned.
"I don't know,"
the naturalist confessed.
"That would depend on a number of factors. The potency of the powder, how much we inhaled, how aggressive the creature was."
"How about we just tie it up and keep it from breaking open? If we're careful, we won't have to worry about getting knocked out at all."
"I suggest we give it to Ashanti, then,"
Batari announced.
"She could tie it on her mirak. She's always one to keep her distance during battle."
"Then I don't think there's much more to talk about. Let's head out." We all checked our weapons as we tied the bag of sleeping powder onto the mirak, and then headed back through the mouth of the cave. Our crew squeezed its way through the narrow tunnel that led to the entrance of the spindrel dwelling, until we came to the massive brush of green that was the neon hedge. Slowly but surely, we plodded through the foliage, and then we popped out into the clearing on the other side. The second I came through the brush, my heart stopped. All of the Monoflock corpses were gone.
"Didn't we just have a battle here last night?"
Mira observed as she tightened her grip on her spear.
"Where did all the bodies go?"
"Alvi told you,"
Pei noted.
"They were eaten by something looking for an easy meal."
"But..."
Mira blinked rapidly and seemed uncharacteristically flabbergasted.
"There aren't even any bones left over. No severed wings or chunks of rotting flesh."
"Food is hard to come by on this island,"
Alvi said as she walked past Mira.
"Creatures are very thorough."
None of the hedgehog women or the boy seemed to be affected by the strange sight, so the rest of my crew simply tried to ignore it. Then Valea walked to the front of the pack, crouched down and mumbled her incantation as she touched the ground. Her spiny hair once again floated around her head as she communed with nature, though this time the message was quite clear.
"This way,"
the blonde hedgehog woman announced.
"The great abyss lies to the north."
Valea led the way as we began to wander through the forest of neon-colored leaves, and the scenery around us was beautiful and quiet as we journeyed further into the Spindrel Island. At the 1 hour mark of our journey, we'd yet to encounter another living creature, aside from the occasional buzzing insect. Every now and again we would hear the sound of rustling leaves or a dull, droning hum in the air, but Valea assured us it was nothing to be afraid of. However, there was one thing on my mind that I knew we should be afraid of. The Great Abyss. Well, that and the hostile fire-breathing dragon that probably lived inside of it. Not to be a total Debbie Downer, but you said you were going to tell us more about this great abyss along the way. What exactly are we walking into?
Honestly?
Pei sighed.
I wish I knew.
Legends about the great abyss are many,
Errol noted.
But we hardly know any truths about it. Like Valea said before, we haven't gone near it in a very, very long time.
Why not? I know you guys all seem to be afraid, but from what you've told me, it just sounds like a giant hole in the ground.
It's much more than that. Mom, tell them the story you always used to tell me before I went to sleep.
The story of Nemea is not for the faint of heart, Kaelan.
Pei trailed off.
Though, I suppose it is one our new friends need to hear. Long ago, even after our population had been ravished by the deadly virus, our numbers were larger. Our tribe included a spindrel by the name of Nemea, a wonderful woman who crafted the most beautiful pieces of weaponry and armor you'd ever seen. She could take a simple stick like this and turn it into a piece of art.
Let me guess.
Swaer's high-pitched voice interjected.
Something terrible happened to her while she was at the Great Abyss.
We sent her out with a hunting party.
Pei continued.
It was made up of Alvi, Ura, and Nemea, all of whom were experts at tracking down their prey. While they were wandering around on the hunt, they discovered the Great Abyss. This is where things took a turn. Alvi and Ura both had a sinking feeling about the pit, and they just wanted to turn around and continue the hunt elsewhere.
Nemea didn't, though.
Kaelon interrupted.
That's right.
Pei confirmed.
Nemea thought, much like you do, that the pit was potentially filled with living creatures, and she might be able to find a new form of game down in the darkness. So, after a large argument, Nemea agreed to climb down inside and see what was actually down there. Alvi and Ura threw together a rope made from the Luminos leaves, and they used it to slowly lower Nemea down into the pit. She only got a few feet down before disaster struck.
Did the rope snap?
Mirella asked with wide eyes.
I wish.
The Magnus Dew sighed.
If that had happened, at least we would know what happened to her. No. Once she was a few feet down, she was swallowed by the darkness.
Alvi growled.
Darkness came up, engulfed her. She screamed, and then she was gone.
The darkness killed her. I raised an eyebrow.
Or something in the darkness.
Pei warned.
Either way, I forbade my people to go near the pit after that. It was too risky.
The Orevs have also told me the Great Abyss is a pit to the underworld itself.
Valea added.
There's nothing but darkness and evil radiating from that tunnel, Draco Rex.
I frowned as I considered the spindrel's story. And with thoughts of evil and darkness fresh in our heads, our crew continued on to the north. As we walked, I swore the plants around us started to glow less bright with each few steps. The air grew moist, too, with a hint of burning plant smell and the distinct odor of decaying flesh. That's when we came across it. There, in the middle of a massive clearing, sat the opening of a massive pit. The thing was easily the size of an entire football field in diameter, and I could see nothing but darkness as I peered into the void. This was it. The Great Abyss.
I see what you mean, Valea.
Batari shuddered.
I'm getting chills just looking at it.
Suddenly, Nadir's tail went rigid, but the raccoon woman smiled as she got down onto all fours and scuttled up to the edge of the abyss.
What are you doing? Didn't you hear what happened in the story?
The Kunag woman didn't seem to even register my warning. Instead, she looked back over her shoulder, smiled, and flicked her tail back and forth like a playful cat.
It's down there, Ben,
Nadir declared.
I can sense it.
My blood ran cold as I mulled over her words. There had been a nagging voice of doubt in my mind the entire journey here, but I would never question a dragon bond, even if that bond was only partly complete. The dragon was here. All right, guys, I declared, as my heart hammered in my chest and I sheathed my sword. We need to get down there and see if Nadir's hunch is correct. Any volunteers? Never in my life had I heard a more deafening silence. These were brave men and women for sure, but in the presence of the Great Abyss, they all seemed to be petrified with terror.
I would go.
Tyrion finally spoke up.
That could be my mom down there. Actually, it could be my uncle or father or sister, too. I'm not exactly too knowledgeable about my family tree.
Jonas? I nodded to the soothsayer. I need you, too. You're the only one who knows how to do the rebonding ceremony.
I knew that was the case, though I will admit I was hoping you would forget.
Nadir or Lazan, I motioned to the Kunag women. We'll need one of you, since you both have partial bonds to the dragons from the volcanic islands.
Oh, Nadir can go.
Lazan spoke out almost instantly.
Since she seems to have a stronger bond to this particular dragon.
I'm sure that's the only reason.
Nadir chuckled.
It definitely doesn't have anything to do with the fact you're second in command, so if I die, you take over as leader of the Kunag, right? The thought never even crossed my mind.
Lazan smirked.
You can count me in, Draco Rex,
Ashanti announced.
You might need the sleeping powder, as well as a person who can strike from afar should things go awry.
I'm coming too,
Alvi grumbled.
Want payback for Nemea?
Okay then. It's settled. The six of us will head down into the pit, and the rest of you keep watch from above. Be ready.
For what?
Theora gulped. Anything. I have no fucking clue what's about to go down. As I went to take a step toward Tyrion, I suddenly felt Morella's arms wrap around me from behind.
Be careful, Dad.
My daughter pleaded.
I know I can be a brat sometimes, but I don't want to lose you.
Hey. I turned around and wiped a tear out of Morella's eye. We've done way crazier stuff than this before, and I've always come out the other side. I won't leave you, Morella, I promise. My daughter's eyes were still full of tears as she gave me a somber nod, but she nodded and took a step back. I gave her a final glance before I walked over to Tyrion, jumped up onto his back, and dug my legs into his scales. Nadir scurried up behind me and wrapped her arms around my waist as if she were riding a motorcycle, and then she laid her head against my back. Jonas and Alvi were right behind the Kunag woman, though their mounts were much, much less intimate than mine and Nadir's. Meanwhile, Ashanti's Mirak scuttled over to the edge of the pit.
Whew. Are we ready?
Tyrion asked in a trembling voice. As ready as we'll ever be. Let's do this. Tyrion took a few lumbering steps over to the edge of the pit, sucked in a deep breath, and spread out his leathery wings. He chuffed with frustration as he dug his feet into the ground, and then the dragon sprang up into the air. Time seemed to sit still as we floated above the void for a second, and then gravity took its course. We plummeted straight downward into the abyss.